Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And welcome to X Squared Radio, Earth Explorers all around the planet. Our AccuWindow forecast, thunderstorms today. Hope our internet holds out. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. The sun is growing quiet as all three Earth-side sunspots today decay. Sorry, turned the wrong knob. Too many knobs to deal with on this program. Nevertheless, there is some action on the sun's western horizon. The solar wind is 406 kilometers per second, but there are no recordable protons striking the Earth today. That's really unbelievable to me. This is the first time I have seen this, and I have been monitoring it for more than 6 years. Very strange indeed. I have no idea why that's happening. Could be because the instrument is not functioning correctly. Those of us who have been above the atmosphere recently have noticed a very strange and persistent green glow above the planet, way, way up there. The green band of light is called air glow. Air glow is a luminous bubble that surrounds our entire planet, decorating the top of the atmosphere with aurora-like color. Although air glow resembles the aurora borealis, its underlying physics is different. Air glow is caused by an assortment of chemical reactions in the upper atmosphere, driven mainly by solar ultraviolet radiation. Auroras, on the other hand, are prompted by gusts of solar wind, or so they say. That's one of the interesting things. We're not really exactly sure what causes this aurora. We don't even know, really, if the solar wind is what makes the aurora happen. Even though it does mostly happen when there's a solar wind, sometimes it happens when there isn't a solar wind, and so we think, gee, I wonder if that's caused by something other than the solar wind. That's why we launch all kinds of special satellites out there just to be sure. Try to see if it's coming from the Earth, coming from the sun, coming from the galaxy. We're just not sure. Of course, the most recent article is that it's caused by cosmic bullets. Yeah, I'm buying that one. It is an indicator that there is a shell of energy around our planet. That's not really a big surprise to most of us. That responds to subtle changes in energy by converting it into light. Chemical energy, electromagnetic energy, maybe even consciousness energy. You know, hey, if we're in a really good mood, maybe the Earth glows green. You can't see it from the ground, however. It requires an oblique view across thousands of miles above upper atmosphere. Next time you're up, take a picture. The crew of Atlantis just did that and caught the green bubble in perfect form just as they docked with the International Space Station. It was pretty cool. If you think that the space program is slowing down, think again. When two small NASA rockets launched into suborbital When two small NASA rockets launched into suborbital space to probe the Earth's ionosphere this month, they kicked off a surprisingly busy week for rockets around the world. No less than 7 rockets blasted off from the United States, Russia, China, and India in as many days. Seven for seven. The race, or should I say, the war for dominance in space is alive and well. Seven rockets in 7 days. It's getting pretty crowded up there, and nobody even knows what they're launching. You think all those Indians, Chinese, and Russians want to watch TV? You think they want GPS? Yeah, maybe. Doubt it. Astronomers have discovered the largest and oldest mass of water ever detected in the universe. Imagine that. A gigantic 12-billion-year-old cloud harboring 140 trillion times more water than all of Earth's oceans combined. So if you think off-worlders are coming here because we have a plethora of water, 140 trillion times more water, and it's old water, is somewhere around this supermassive black hole called a quasar, located 12 billion light-years from Earth. It's probably not still there since we just saw the light of it. But the discovery shows that water has been prevalent in the universe for nearly its entire existence, researchers said. Quote, because the light we are seeing left this quasar more than 12 billion years ago, I just said that, we are seeing water that was present only some 1.6 billion years after the beginning of the universe, said study co-author Alberto Bolatto of the University of Maryland in a statement. He goes on, quote, this discovery pushes the detection of water 1 billion years closer to the Big Bang than any previous find. Yeah, and what if the Big Bang never happened? How about that? Now, this is really strange news, and I'm going to call it science news, maybe science fiction news, but it could also be proof that the ancients did what Sitchin and others say that they were doing. Scientists have created more than 150 human-animal hybrid embryos. No, not in Nazi Germany. In British laboratories. That's right. The hybrids have been produced secretively over the past 3 years by researchers looking into the possible cures for a wide range of diseases. Also a likely story. The revelation comes just a day after a committee of scientists warned of a nightmare, quote, Planet of the Apes scenario, in which work on human-animal creations goes too far. Figures seen by the Daily Mail show that 155 admixed embryos containing both human and animal genetic material have been created since the introduction of the 2008 Human Fertilization Embryology Act. Wow, wouldn't you like to read that act just to see what the language is in this act? Unbelievable, unbelievable. By the way, if you want to be part of tonight's program, and we highly encourage you to do so, BBS Radio, in its continuous improving push for excellence, is now offering a toll-free number. So if you're listening anywhere in North America, you can reach us by dialing 888-260-3070, 888-260-3070. And if you're wanting to dial us up on the cell phone and listen, you won't be able to talk, but you'll be able to listen to the entire program on your Bluetooth while you're driving, hands-free, please. You can call in 760-569-7676. I'll give that again, 760-569-7676. And then you'll have to dial the passcode 192-919-pound. We have a lot of listeners that listen this way. And then they bravely send emails after the show. Hey, it's better than nothing. Come on. But you're braver than that. You'll be happy to call in. Because some of the stuff we're talking about tonight is going to be very controversial. Some might even call it fringe. No, not French. Fringe. It means like on the very outside edge. I had someone today tell me, you know, I put in the words paranormal internet talk radio in Google. And X Squared Radio came up number one. I said, of course. It's been number one for over 3 years on Google. And then he said, but paranormal, doesn't that mean ghosts? Doesn't that mean goblins? Doesn't it mean like scary stuff? I said, no. Maybe that's what they call it on the Sci-Fi Channel, but paranormal means literally above normal. Okay, it's the difference between being one step ahead of everyone and being two steps ahead of everyone. This program is two steps ahead of everyone. That's why we call it paranormal, above normal, internet talk radio, scientific talk radio for your mind. And so we want you to bring your mind, bring your emotions, bring your perspective to the program. Give us a call, 260-3070, 888-260-3070. It's on the website. It's on BBS Radio's website, Channel 2, and you're welcome to join us. In our second hour tonight, my good friend and brother James Gilliland is coming on the program. We started a conversation last night, and it got away from us. I mean, the energy was so hot, we couldn't hang up the phone lines. They had fused across space and time. And so we decided to carry on tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific time. So tell all your friends to go ahead and dial us up, because you never know what's going to happen when James and I get on the radio. Now, I have a couple more items that I want to bring up this hour as part of the monologue to get things going. And I want to discuss this Human Fertilization Embryology Act. I want to discuss this 150 human-animal hybrid program that's been going on. Scientists, not German. At every stage, the justification from scientists has been, if you allow us to do, we will find cures for every illness known to mankind. Well, my friends, many are calling this emotional blackmail, because there are tens of millions of people who live on this planet who have incurable diseases. Now, they're not necessarily lethal, okay? Asthma, diabetes, gout, these are all incurable diseases. Can we live with them? Yes, of course. The pharmaceutical community has seen to it that we can live fairly normal lives. Of course, if we stop paying, we start hurting. So they keep shipping the little white pills and the little clear vials as long as we're willing to pay. Emotional blackmail, indeed. He goes on, of the 80 treatments and cures which have come about from stem cells, you all are familiar with stem cell research. For those of you that don't know what a stem cell is, all cells in their very early stages, that shall I say embryonic stages, have all the genetic material to build an entire body, but they don't. They don't. When they're in the muscle and the muscle is damaged or it works out too much, they make muscle cells. When you break a bone and you knit it back together and you stimulate it to heal itself, it makes bone cells. Stem cells are the precursor cell that right before it decides to be what it's going to be. Well, a lot of these diseases, in humans especially, are brought on because the cells have forgotten how to make what they're supposed to make. The pancreas doesn't make insulin anymore. The liver doesn't do what it's supposed to do. The endocrine system doesn't do what it's supposed to do because the cells that produce these chemicals, these hormones, these proteins, these enzymes don't do it anymore. And so we have to artificially supplement the body by injecting or taking various drugs in order to mimic what those cells can do naturally if they were there. So with stem cell research, especially embryonic stem cell research, what we are able to do is to replace the cells that can do those jobs. But on a global basis, the use of embryonic stem cells is verboten. You can't do it. It's immoral. Oh, you think, no, wait. No. Okay, hang on a second. Let me make the point here. The reason that it's forbidden is because you see what money the pharmaceutical companies are making off of a little bit of brew that they happen to put together in the right proportions. A little brew that happens to be a little bit more effective than a double-strength placebo and doesn't kill the host, usually, unless you use it too much. Of course, there are all those other side effects like weeping eyes and nausea and leakage from various orifices and death. Of course, you have to look by that because most everybody gets some improvement for it. Their cholesterol is lowered. Their heart settles out. Their liver starts working again. Their cancer is subsided. Their eyesight comes back. And we can all live with a few side effects, right? If you think for one moment that the mega trillion-dollar pharmaceutical industry would not immediately begin farming embryos for those cells, you're fooling yourself. It is the one time when civilian legislation has stepped in and said no. Now, I'm not saying that there have not been bills on the floor to allow it, under limited circumstances, of course. I mean, after all, we do have a higher genetic class of people to preserve, do we not? Yeah, they have more zeros in their bank account than you do, but that's because they're genetically higher order beings than you. Well, sure, that's what it means. Come on, I saw the movie 2012. I know what I'm talking about. So we can't use embryonic stem cells, so we have to use adult stem cells. And so of the 80 treatments and cures which have come about from stem cells, all of them have come from adult stem cells, not embryonic ones. And that's their story, and they're sticking to it. So on moral and ethical grounds, this fails, this blending of animal and human, and on the scientific and medical ones too. Josephine Quinteval of Pro-Life Group Comment on Reproductive Ethics says, "I am aghast that this is going on and we didn't know anything about it." Come on, Josephine. You got to swing a bigger bat than that. I know you're getting those little crow's feet around your eyes, and a little stem cell treatment under the skin would give you that 19-year-old face again. I know all about the liver spots on your hands. Yeah, that's right. A little stem cell cream on that, and boom, you've got 20-year-old hands again. I am aghast that this is going on, and we didn't know anything about it. I'm sure that's not how she said it. It was probably more something like this. I am aghast that this is going on and we didn't know anything about it. Yeah, you're going to get your fair share, Josephine. Don't worry about it. Come on. Aghast. You haven't heard the half of it. The ancients used to play with this stuff all the time. They had the ability and nobody looking over their shoulder. They blended DNA and genetics from animals and plants and came up with what we are today. Why have they kept this a secret? Well, if they are proud of what they are doing, why do we need to ask parliamentary questions for this to come to light? The problem with many scientists is that they want to do things because they want to experiment. Okay, it's Everest. Come on, this petri dish is right here. This petri dish is right here. I have the pipette in my hands. Nobody's looking. What if I come up with the next cure for baldness? Ooh. That is not a good enough rationale. Let's see what the listeners say. Ken, you're online.
Yes.
Welcome to the program.
Doctor, I love you.
It's good to be loved. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're awesome. Thank you for all your inspirational communication. Opens up a lot of gates.
Well, you know, I just try to get the, I try to arouse the faculties. Once people get thinking, then they start looking at what was a simple media quip or a soundbite. They now put their finger on the side of their cheek and go, hey, wait a minute. If 37% of the people are for it, doesn't that mean that 63% of the people are against it?
I understand totally, and that's no coincidence you said 37.
Oh, enlighten me.
Well, you know, when you look at mathematics, you have the old ancients, as you were talking about, and they used quality and story and word, and you'll find that in the numerology. It's an ancient superstition that superimposes, and obviously we agree to it. It's the story above the sum. So if you look at 37, what you would look in numerology, that old superscript that continues to ripple for many who are not enlightened, and they can't give up above the mental construct and look down on it, they're going to be stuck in the sums of the quantity math. But 37 is going to be like a supreme mind Christ consciousness. It's the story above the sum.
Numerology sometimes evades me, and my eyes kind of glaze over. But
yeah, me too.
You are a master at the relationship, the mathematical relationship between numbers, and that's not numerology. That's force. That's
correct.
Energy. That's harmony and chaos, and you're the master of it.
Well, I did put together a bulletin. You had indicated that you had your audience roughly about 4.5 years ago, one-on-one, and you were trying to communicate kennings of the soul, justice, peace, mercy, war games. And I cracked it into assimilating duality. But one can't see this, they can feel it. Would you like to hear that bulletin?
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, I just want to let my listeners know that Ken Payne is the one that originated the mercy, justice, war, peace paradigm. And it's not a paradigm. It's really an icon. And you really have to see it to appreciate it because it's actually a visual thing. So continue on, Ken.
Yes, thank you much, Doc. What I was looking at was looking down from story at source. One can use icons to, I guess you could say, re-stimulate immortal memory. That's going to be mercy. One loses immortal memory, and they rush in right southwest like a Q. And you know that the pole, 23 degrees slightly off to the left, you'll get a southwest coming into the hologram, at which point you're going to go right into chaos. And you, most people come in at justice to make right, and they lose their immortal memory. They go right down into war. And in the righteous computations with self-fulfilling prophecies, and they have these emotions from the past in the subconscious, the ghost in the machine effect, to come in, make right. And then poof, they go asleep in the sand of spiritual amnesia through the duality experience. Now, that's one half of the X of the kenning. The other side You take to the right if you wanted to. It's all choice. You could have fair exchange, peace, via prosperity, because fair exchange goes to prosperity via peace. That's on the right side. If you wanted to, above mental construct, you could come in south, east, and go down into just. You can go down into justice. That's your full X, your faculty X at game zero, clear level. Now that's beautiful, because it's all choice. Now what I've cracked on this bulletin, I won't be able to duplicate because right now I'm too excited being connected to you. So I want to go ahead and play this, and I think you'll enjoy it, especially your audience.
Sure.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, let me crank this. This is let's see what we've got here. Here we go. East and go down into justice. Give me get this thing here going. Go ahead and keep talking. Let me see you duplicate some of that so that we can get some clarity on your side.
Okay. You know, as I understand this cycle and humanity as you trace it through history follows this cycle like a mathematical formula. We go through mercy and peace and justice and war in an ever-increasing frequency. And it would be so beautiful if we could just stop the wheel from turning and stop it in the mercy and peace apex and not go into justice and war.
Well, that is possible. That is a calling to greatness. Socrates said to know thyself. That's certainly above a mental construct. That's going to take some games for dynamis, life energy purge clearing. One certainly can have their IQ increase, and we'll call that direct percept prescience. The actual karmic DNA antenna, so to speak, is going to actually have the bring in the experience, and that's a lethietics, and that's a life energy purge for that huge, softly strong presence above time, space, continuum, construct.
Well, you know, we had another great teacher whose main teaching was not know thyself, love thyself.
True that. That's really going to be the answer right there.
Because you can't really...
When you run up into integration levels, I was talking to one of our favorite philosophers, Brooks. Enid, I was running a session with her, and I said, God, I love myself. She goes, well, that's going to be a, you know, because you know, always running knowledge problem knowledge levels. She goes, well, that could split one and two, because one could say in the mirror effect, you can't see yourself, you're too close to the truth, you are the truth in harmony levels, but you can certainly love others and see aspects of love in others. So I don't know if you've received this
There's the original self-awareness, the great I am, and at that point, you are self-aware, although there isn't perspective between anyone else.
I totally get that.
Even you and you, but it had to be an act of love.
Oh, no doubt about it. Above action, where you talk as static, that feeling of being in the central nexus between kennings, oh, you know, that's an awesome communication you just put out.
You know, I was speaking with some Mormon folks out in Arizona not long ago, and I brought up the subject of the Liahona. The Liahona was this little brass ball of curious workmanship that was delivered outside the tent of Lehi while they were fleeing in the desert. And curious instrument it was, because it would give them text messages and had various needles on it that would point which way to go to hunt and how to direct the ship and how to build a ship and how to prepare food and things like that. But it operated off of consciousness. If they had a higher consciousness, loving, merciful, patient, long-suffering, then it powered up. When they became jealous or fearful or angry or hateful, then it would not work. I thought this was a brilliant biofeedback system that was mentioned in this record.
Wow. Yeah. My works have taken the 15-window matrix mirror and turned it into a yin-yang clarity meter and run scripts and soul wounds on the left. So, yeah, I think it's a repeating history on superscript. Take your figure 8 and you'll see left is, some of the Kenyon's action runs through that. Right in the center, being the light of the world, in that harmonic congruence of love and that level of consciousness that you're communicating is, wow. I mean, you're really on it, man.
Why 15?
I mean, you're really on it, Brooks.
I'm trying to figure out the force of 15. Why is it 15 windows?
Well, 15, if you go into the Veda, you'll see that their symbol for infinity will be looking like an octopus. And it has 15 tentacles. Then you go into the old, still coming out of the Hindu side. It's a little post-Sumerian stuff. But you'll see 15 is equivalent to grace. So 15 will equal grace. Grace, basically, in modern-day terms, would be called passive captivation, the hierarchy, the not feeling guilty in hierarchy, not using envy for admiration, and the guilt. So once one goes up into your levels, you're communicating, you're talking about passive captivation. You go down in the tent of illusion, you're going to have those three levels, the hero's journey, starting at attention with the desire for attention, you know, baby scream all night, not be hoarse when wake up in morning. Cross over into solids, you're in, you know, that, you know, shopkeeper's love, where, you know, love becomes loving, and it's, you know, I did this for you, you did this for me, we're keeping score stuff. The next crossover is up into presence levels. So 15 is at the top at a magnitude based on radius and passion, and then you're going to go to a little bit of gematria. You've already discovered or rediscovered or researched that. Of course, I already think you know. Then you go down in the tent, and then in that 15 window matrix on the left, you'll find the yin. On the right, you'll find the yang, and you'll have a dance, a coalescence. But that needle, that pointing, that wiggle, of course it wiggles. It's not static down in a hologram.
Well, I'm trying to think about what the square root of 15 is, and I know it's 3-something. And I think that the yin and the yang don't add to one another. They multiply times one another. And this is what gives the life force of God. This is God took the square root of himself to create individuals.
Yeah, that was great. It's precise. When you look at some of these dichotomies, you'll find precision. You'll find certainty. One is of static and one has freedom. And the way you organize your thoughts, the way you communicate that, it's going up. Let's back off of that there a little bit. Let's let them resonate on that just a little bit. There's a clean race for grace. That, you know, we were talking about the spirit race about 3 or 4 years ago. I can see you championing that by presence alone. I find that words get in the way.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I'm thinking about your words, precision and certainty. In archery, for instance, there's precision and accuracy. Precision is the ability to group all the arrows together. And accuracy is the ability to put the arrows in the bullseye. We may be able to group very well, but we're way off target. We're sinning. We're missing the target.
Oh, no, we're missing, yeah. Let me confirm and acknowledge what I'm feeling. We are alive. Most people don't realize that they are. All right, in other words, for your audience to confirm their divinity, if you took a number line zero manifest, and let's just say that above knowledge, above mental construct, say that you can't see yourself, and of course you block flow, and you must press down into pain and the limitation of your infinity to express, that's X, press out or express your uniqueness. That's how beauty from truth, diversity. Now, there's a lot of intellect in the seventh sphere. Then you have this mystery zone between emotion, that's the thunder, and the cloud would be blocked up. It's kind of like a Mobius ribbon. You get like an upside down with a half twist, and you view as those sources on the outside. And that's an old, it's a bit of a lie. It's done on purpose for miscontrol. Anyway, getting down, you'll look. Go ahead and look up to the sky, see the clouds, and all know that we hold back our emotion. And we're making much less of ourselves to play this game with a social lie, if I don't wear this mask, they won't feed us, and that causes more pain. But, you know, in the balance, you have some beauty there because there's, you know, as many beauties as there are moods. Look up, and you'll see this curtain shower of all these segments of rays, and that gives you mental construct parallel. Now, look in the ocean of knowledge and love, the ups and downs of the well-traveled journey, and I see the zillions and trillions of sparkles. Now, I see you. You're beautiful. You're brilliant. Now, that was peace through those kinnings so that now I can see you now in this time construct concept.
I get that.
So you sparkle and I sparkle.
The intellect, and a lot of people are intimidated by that word. It's just the ability to tune the lens of the mind, or should I say tune the lens of the brain so that your mind can work through the biological transducer of the body. Some are better at it than others, but everyone can do it a little bit. And you mentioned attributes such as beauty and grace and the coordination of being able to do a very complex, which I never could do, the complex dives. I get about halfway through and do a giant belly flop, and I'm proud of it.
Me too.
But
the mixture of love and anger.
Yeah.
I totally understand. Let me acknowledge it. Intellect is like electricity or intuit, like intention. You got to get into it. That thunder is like your psychic abilities intuitively. The being does use the brain like a switchboard. And there's 33, vertebrae. It's, you know, when you're looking at that seventh sphere of intellect, one shrinks down from pressing the pain of limiting their infinity, the bite of knowledge. Knowledge gives you the illusion of separation. Let me get the zero manifest here. Now, if you took 15 out, if you take any number out that you're pretending particle resonance to view and see the sparkling stuff of life, you just take that out, you'll realize above knowledge, which knowledge does give one the illusion of separation. That's why they have a fig leaf. You have figure, think, look, permeate, knowing. Look at that fig. You figure this out. You lose unity. You think about unity, and it's lost. We think we're bodies. We're just, you know, it's a denser form of a sparkle on the ocean of love. Take 15 out. And what I'm really saying, above knowledge, at zero manifest, if you don't exist, nothing exists. Now, take 15 out.
That's true.
Take
because
you out of the equation. You cannot be taken out of this equation. Because you're here as zero, pretending that you're a particle. Waves form particles. Take 15 out of the number line. Poof. Nothing exists. If you don't exist, nothing exists. It goes back to, you know, zero manifest above knowledge. Because, again, knowledge does give the illusion of separation.
I'm with you. I'm with you, my friend.
Yeah, I know you are. I can feel you. Again, words do get in the way.
Yeah, well,
now,
they
words
do.
Words form light.
I'm trying to remind myself that we have hundreds of people out there listening to our conversation, and they may not be able to appreciate that you and I went through many, many, many green bottles to come up with this ice dance of great intellect and understanding on a level that most humans don't get a chance to even consider. When we walked out on the sidewalk,
let me acknowledge and confirm your divinity. What I'm saying to everyone that is rooted to source, it's kind of like a mirror. If you look at the supreme mind, the voice of knowledge in the head, the gossip, the rumory, they won't feed me because the prime survive kicks in, and the fear, the voice in the head, runs to the first dynamic of self, to the family, soul wounds, boom, block it up, third in work, politics, mankind, birds, bees, flowers, and trees, sixth sphere is global, you know, physical universe stuff. Okay, on this side of the mirror, our words are light. For instance, don't think of a black cat with an orange background. Yes, that's word. Just form light in your thought field. And all thought fields and all the supreme mind and all dynamics or spheres of existence are kind of like one, but we have the illusion of disconnection. You can go bipolar if you don't have a unified
illusion, that illusion is brought on because of the sequencing of the way we have to put words together to get a thought across. If you could get the pure thought across, and that's what I appreciate so much about your in-depth study of this, is you created icons, you created visuals that people could look at and get the whole thought in one vision without the sequencing of the words.
Yeah, again, I appreciate your confirmation. If you look at how simple this is, you take the nine spheres like a glass onion, okay? Once one has an integration, they'll have a, for me, it's compassion. It's mercy for the immortal memory gain levels. It's a priestly class. It's compassion. So one who desires peace must learn fair exchange. Words get in the way. We are truth. We're too close to it. Now let's take the ninth sphere called is. Even putting a word on it. You have to go above scripts. You have to have a Zen-level mind. You don't have to. You may choose to have go above intellect, that seventh sphere, above the lightning, and be. Now, right between be and is, there's a harmony. Now, right in the center of the mirror, you go to sleep on this side in this white, milky compassion where words form light, and everything that we're viewing in this co-created hologram of reality is word. It's spidery type of dynamis flow. All it is, and you know, Brooks, no one's touching anything. We know that by quantum mechanics. No one's touching anything. It's a mock-up. Now, we know that's white, uh-huh. And it's knowledge, and light is carried on that. That's spider or moth, and it's silk. It's white. It slows down our manifestations. Now, you go to sleep tonight. You'll forget about this side. You'll go to the black hole side in the void, where all of your manifestations happen too fast, like a smoky mirror. And you wish to be able to remember this. So you're constantly forgetting. We're addicted to forgetfulness. Right in the center between those two concepts, those two mock-ups, is where we exist at integration. Compassion. Mercy, grace, everything is happening now. Because you look at the triangle of intent on the left side, it's linear, of course, it's a lie. You're looking at the past. On the right side of the mirror, you're looking into the future. Now, of course, it's a mock-up because, you know, above that circle, I mean, that triangle is a circle of always has been, always will be, I am stuff. Now, I am. Can you think of any other words that we can use to confuse, because words get in the way because they are so intellectually flying light, all light, 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 light. Look out in the world, the movie we co-create, you co-create. We are doing this. We're doing this. Once the beings wake up to the simple fact that the micros are the creating force that make up the macro, which just is, then the voice of knowledge, the gossip in the head, the illusion of separation caused by knowledge, which creates the beauty hologram, is embraced with ease and no more dis-ease, no more insanity, no more war. But that's a mercy mission. That's a spirit race. That's champion.
Well,
but that is a calling to greatness.
Hopefully it's just a peace one. You don't want to have too much mercy, because then you have to bring in justice later. Ken, okay. I could talk about this for hours, but I have 12 minutes left in this hour, and I totally appreciate the phone call.
I love you.
I love you, Ken.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Talk to you later.
Awesome.
Ken is one of my close friends. We traversed a universe in about 3 months and really crossed a chasm of consciousness. A great, great help, a great, great friend. I have a few minutes left in this hour, and I can have the phone call, but I wanted to get through this thing on the stem cells, because the Brits are the British scientists are justifying it, saying that we could cure every illness known to man if you'll just give us a few more dollars, a little more time. We can get this done. The problem with many scientists is that they want to do things just because they want to experiment. And I respect that. But that's really not a good enough rationale. There's evidence that ancients were doing this very same thing, that they were blending animals and humans. Newcastle University is another site where human animal hybrid testing was being undertaken. Earlier this week, a group of leaders and because of the movies and then the series it's coming out in a couple of weeks, warned the planet that's making me wobble. That's all there. Comcast, give it away to someone. All right, there we go. Now we've got enough bandwidth back that we can continue. Hang on one moment. I'm waiting for. On this side of town, there are four hotels. All four hotels have bad internet because of Comcast. Okay, I think we're back. I think we're clear enough. I can continue. They've called for new rules to prevent lab animals from being given human attributes, for example, by injecting human stem cells into the brains of primates. I think they have it wrong, okay? I think there's a military budget that is beyond anything these scientists have ever dreamed of to give humans the attributes of animals. It's the other way around completely. They're not putting the human attributes in the animals. They're putting the animal attributes in the humans, as if we needed any help whatsoever. We can comment on that in the next couple of hours if you want to call in. Otherwise, we can struggle along making our way with our infirmities. I have a little bit of humor every time I hear people going or saying that asthma is increasing or diabetes is increasing or several of these other what was once debilitating and life-shortening diseases is now proliferating. People, it is simple genetics, okay? Many of these diseases are hereditary. If your grandmother had diabetes, chances are you're going to have diabetes, right? If your grandfather had high blood pressure and died of heart disease, you're probably going to have high blood pressure and die of heart disease. That's the way it goes. But the pharmaceutical industry has learned to treat the symptoms. They've learned to unblock the arteries. They've learned to keep the platelets from sticking together. They've learned to keep the blood pressure down so it doesn't make that aneurysm burst. They've learned to artificially put insulin in your bloodstream so you don't go into insulin shock or sugar shock. And thus, you live long enough to have children. And they have children. And that is why these diseases are proliferating. And for no other reason, no. There is no conspiracy making people have asthma. There's no conspiracy making people have all these strange diseases. That isn't it at all. It's just simple genetics. So as we consider all these and consider these ideas, I want you to use common sense about it. However, I also definitely believe that this messing around with the animal and human DNA, if they're going to do it, they need to do it behind closed doors. And honestly, I really don't want to see a soldier out on the battlefield that can run as fast as a horse. I don't think we're ready for that. I think the ancients were. I think there's proof that the ancients played with it, that the battlefield suffered because of it. You look at some of the weaponry that the Romans and the Greeks developed. They were not to fight one another. They certainly weren't to knock castle walls down. They were to fight giants. They were to pierce the armor plating of giants. Okay, men like Charlemagne, 7 foot four, 400 pounds, men like that, which towered 2 feet above any man around them, could cleave a man from his collarbone to his pelvis in a single blow. That's the kind of genetic engineering that we would see. Or the very wealthy, and believe me, there are a lot of them out there now. If you don't believe me, pick up a copy of Forbes magazine and just look at the list of the top 400. Oh, yeah, there are more than that. The top 400 billionaires. The top 400 billionaires. I'm telling you, I know this like I know anything for a fact. Any one of those billionaires would pay a significant amount of money to get their hair back, to get their waistline back, to fix their skin, to get everything back to where it was when they were young. Because genetically, we age. We age. Somewhere down the line, somebody is going to figure out how to fix that aging switch, and when they do, the wealthy will be the first ones in line. Of course, we all know they're a higher order being than we are, or so they would lead us to believe. We'll take a quick break, 3 minutes, and we'll be back with James Gilliland. Don't go away. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio after this.
Saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archers split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 21st century. Well, I was lying in a burned up basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for a replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie.
Well, I dreamed I saw the silver spaceship flying in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen one.
All in a dream. All in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun.
Sorry about that. Welcome back to Expert Radio. The forecast is rain. Hopefully, just an effect on our Comcast are listening. Your internet is not waterproof. Earth will undoubtedly have a front row seat when the dying red supergiant star finally blows itself into oblivion. Explosion will be so bright.
Looks like we have another call. La 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 la. Okay, let's knock that one out. I'm messing up station one. All right. The explosion will be so bright that even though the star in the Orion constellation is 640 light years away, remember that number, there will be a test later, 640 light years away, it will still turn night into day and appear like there are two suns in the sky for weeks. The only real debate is over exactly when it will happen. In stellar terms, Betelgeuse is predicted to crash and burn in the very near future. But that doesn't necessarily mean you have to rush out and buy sunglasses, because the word very near future could mean anything in stellar terms. Brad Carter, senior lecturer of physics at the University of Southern Queensland in Australia, claimed yesterday that the galactic blast could happen before 2012 or at any time over the next million years. Now, okay, we'll hang around to see if you're right or wrong, Brad. This old star is running out of fuel in its centa, Dr. Carter told the Australian website news.com. This fuel keeps Betelgeuse shining and supported. When this fuel runs out, the star will literally collapse in upon itself, and it will do so very quickly. This is the final hurrah for the star. If it goes bang, it explodes, it lights up, we'll have incredible brightness for a brief period of time, for a couple of weeks. And then, over the coming months, it begins to fade. It will be very hard to see at all. When a star goes bang, the first we will observe of it is a rain of tiny particles called neutrinos. They will fill the Earth, bizarrely enough, even supernovae we see visually will light up the sky. 9% of supernova is released in these particles that will come through our bodies and through the Earth with absolutely no harm whatsoever. I believe that, no harm whatsoever. A neutrino can go through a light year of Earths and never hit a thing. But that doesn't mean they don't have an effect. Neutrinos are energy, and energy is information. And information transferred to human DNA changes or switches on human genetics. We are about to evolve. The first supernova that history records is thought to have occurred in 185 BC, when a star 8,200 light years away, how far away was Betelgeuse? Right you are, 640 light years. This star, 8,200 light years away, exploded. Chinese astronomers make explicit note of the sudden appearance of a star and its subsequent disappearance several months later, and the Romans may also have made more cryptic references to it. Astronomers have since located the remnants of the exploded star, confirming the accuracy of the ancient accounts. Well, the interesting thing is that this particular star happens to be in the constellation Orion. So that means that the feather, the quill of the arrow of Orion is going to disappear. It's going to disappear. So, I mean, it's not like his pants are going to fall off. The belt is still intact, ladies. It's just the arrow. But if you're going to take a picture of Orion, get out to a dark sky, you better get your pictures now because it's all about to change. It's going to be pretty cool. I think that we should just, instead of fighting, instead of worrying, instead of panicking about it, it's only going to be bright for 3, maybe 5 weeks. I think we should party. Yeah, that's right. A supernova party planet-wide, and it starts at sundown. Okay, sundown of our sun, sun up of the Orion sun, the Betelgeuse sun. That's what we'll call it, the Betelgeuse sundown party. Wow, could be great. All right, in this hour, we're going to bring James Gilliland on, and we're going to pick up where everyone left off. Yes, everyone on every talk radio program left off somewhere. We're about to pick it up. Welcome to the program, James. All right, maybe we don't have James yet. We're working on it.
Hello.
Somewhere
Hello.
Out. Ah, he is out there. Welcome to the program.
Oh, good to be on the show.
Just for the record, James, it's not a show. It's a program. There are shows on the BBS radio network. This is a program. We talk about real stuff.
I'm really getting feedback here. It's taken about three or four seconds for my words to go on.
Yes, I know. It's got to be Comcast. They have the worst internet on the planet. That's my endorsement. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah.
Anybody has a solution for Southern Mississippi Comcast, I'd be willing to hear about it. Southern Mississippi is like a third world country when it comes to internet.
Yeah, it's definitely about three or four seconds for my work to come back.
Well, I have everything shut down. Everything shut down except you. So it sounds good on my end, but I am hearing you drop in and out just a little bit.
Okay, we can go with it.
Well, we can either do that or we can do a total reboot and have Don hang up and call me back and we'll start over again. It won't take but about 30 seconds for him to do that. Is that what you want to do, Don? Done. All right, here we go. We're powering down. We'll be back. Don't go away. So while he's powering down, you're going to hear the internet go down. We'll stay live because you're here with me. So he needs to do some things. He's got to pull an extension cord, put two wires in his mouth, keep those wet, move around, move your beer over, plug that in. Okay, now it's coming together. So anyway, I'd like to have some feedback out there about the Betelgeuse supernova party. I think it's an awesome idea. We should put it in the queue since we don't know if it's going to happen before 2012 or in a million years. It's a little hard to get some funding behind it, but I think it would be great. I think there are some rules to the party, general rules to the party. No weapons allowed, okay? No weapons, no fighting, no arguing. Yes, we can have discussions about all kinds of things, but no fighting. That means all of you out there, everywhere in the world, you got to lay down your weapons. We're partying, okay, till the sun goes out. It's a Betelgeuse party. It's a Betelgeuse sun up 24 hours a day party. Rule number two, no sleeping. You can only sleep when the sun goes down, and the sun's not going to go down for about 3 weeks. You can crash, okay, but you can't. Go down. You can't disappear and say, I'm going to bed. No. And if you do go to bed, you can't go by yourself. Okay? Got to go with a friend. My fans are still hanging in there, even though the internet is taking a bath. So hold on one second. We're going to do a disconnect and a reconnect, and hopefully we get in there with a clean internet connection. All right, James is on his phone. Okay, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. No, you're not supposed to say it three times. You know what will happen, I think. Yeah, I was just thinking about that movie, you know, the movie Beetlejuice with Michael Keaton. Tremendous movie. And I, too, loved some of the songs in that movie. I liked when they were sitting around the table. And they did the old, what was it? Was it a Harry Belafonte song? The Come Mr. Tallyman, Come Tally My Banana. Ooh. Daylight Come and. No, that wasn't it. Okay. I'm probably not remembering it right. But it was a cool song. You know, everybody kind of did the puppetry around the table, and Winona Ryder. Was so cute in that movie, and Michael Keaton was unbelievable. I can guarantee you that all of that stuff was not written down. He ad-libbed most of that movie. All right. I'm showing a lot of bars here, guys. I don't know if it's my equipment or am I holding my mouth wrong or what. I've got a nice tight string and two cans between here and the hotel next door, because the hotel I'm in, the internet doesn't work.
Hello?
But the rates are great. All right. Welcome back, James. So I was proposing this Beetlejuice party.
Hello?
You know, when Beetlejuice goes supernova, it's going to be bright for about 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be like no sundown. And so we were trying to come up with ideas of things to do while Beetlejuice was lit up in its supernova glory, since we're going to be out taking neutrino baths in the middle of the night. I think we should have a supernova party. I don't know. Still the echo. Who's echo? I'm not echoing.
Yeah, over here.
Oh, I'm echoing over there, or you're echoing?
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, yes, yes. I can.
Okay, hear good. You. I think we're fixed. I had to run to another phone, and we still had feedback, but now it seems to be working.
Now it's beautiful. All right, so what we were talking about, I got a bunch of Skypers that are texting into me. I just gave the news that Beetlejuice was about to explode, according to the Australian astronomer who's making the announcement. It could blow up before 2012 or in the next million years. So assuming that it blows up, I think what we should do is like have a Beetlejuice party preparation set aside, because if the sun doesn't go down for 3 weeks and the rear arrow, or what should I say, the quill of the arrow of Orion is going to light up like a sun for 3 weeks. And since we're going to be out at night taking a big fat neutrino bath anyway, we should just have a 3 week peace party.
That sounds good to me. Just won't be able to do it at night.
Well, you can't fight. Okay, there's no more fighting anywhere on the planet, because there are no shadows in which to hide. All night vision goggles are deactivated.
Yeah, we won't be able to watch the UFOs up here.
I don't know. I think the UFOs, instead of flying really high where we can't see them, they have to come really low and land.
Exactly. You know, interesting you'd say that, but we just had an event here last night that was, the place is packed. I mean, there's wall-to-wall people here. I don't know why everybody chose to come up for this weekend, but there was quite a few people out in the field, and we had the most phenomenal event happen here. We had four ships come in, and they look like a red arc welding light, really bright, came in. And they came in as a triangle at first with one trailing it, and then all of a sudden they just lined up, and one landed on the mountain over at Flat Top Mountain. That's over towards Sleeping Beauty. And one landed, seemed like it landed over on the, went over to the mountain, was doing something, and the other three lined up right over the middle of town and straight up, you know, straight up and down, perfect alignment, all three ships just sitting there glowing. And it went on for quite a while, and unfortunately, both of my cameras were down. One of them broke, and it's in being repaired, and the other one was being downloaded on all the stuff from the night before, because we had, like, massive ships the night before, and I just sent it out, the birthday ship. I got a beautiful ship on my birthday, which I meditated and asked for, fly right over the house and power up, and so we got that on film, too. But unfortunately, we weren't ready for it, but there is a guy here, and I believe his name is Nathan, that filmed the whole thing, but he took off, and we haven't been able to get the footage, so we're tracking him down so we can actually get the footage of the event, but we had so many witnesses, but it was right over the town of Trout Lake and very, very low, you know, it totally in-your-face sighting, you know. So, and a lot of the local people saw it because they were talking to me about it today.
Oh, maybe that's why they want you to move out, because they're tired of having the UFOs come in and spook their animals.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anything was spooked, you know, other than ignorance. A lot of ignorance might have gotten spooked by it, but you know, it was an amazing event. It was just beautiful seeing these ships and the way they aligned and you know, no, everybody just was just in awe of it. And I was just, you know, going, does anybody have a camera? If you do, start shooting pictures, you know. And a few people took snapshots of it, but you know, that doesn't really work very well.
Yeah,
you
really.
We'll see what comes together on it. I'm really hoping somebody will send me a clip or we'll have some photographs of that event.
I was talking to the folks down in Phoenix, and they were saying that lately they have had a lot of flyovers. And I was talking to two investigators from MUFON, and those guys are pretty picky. I mean, you really have to bring in something that's not a satellite. You have to have a time signature. You have to have good film, nothing blurry. It's got to be corroborated with two cameras. They're very discriminating at MUFON, and they were saying they're having a big increase in legitimate flyovers in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to be, you know, basically happening everywhere, is what I've seen. I've just seen, you know, basically it's, you know, everywhere, you know, these things are happening. You know, I'm getting, you know, from my emails, I'm getting reports from all over the world where people are talking about, you know, major sightings, very up close, you know, undeniable major cities now. They seem to be making themselves known.
Well, a while back, you and I were talking about UFOs and lights in the daytime sky. And I think it was in October or early November. I think it was in October, because what had just happened a couple days before was this incredible multi-ship daytime hovering flyover New York City. Mm-hmm. And we were watching the news clips of the newscasters down on the sidewalk with people on the side, you know, sitting there with their foot-long chili dog with onions and sauerkraut on top, looking up going, hey, that's really cool. You know, I got the distinct impression that something very strange was going on, because wasn't this the city that, you know, got nervous if a small airplane flew out of the pattern? Haven't they really become a little gun-shy, so to speak, about strange things flying over the city? How come nobody, no helicopters, no jet planes, no airplanes went up to find out what was hovering around over New York City?
I think they already know what it is, and they already knew it was coming, because one of the NORAD guys actually said that there would be an event, you know, over New York City, and And, you know, there's a good chance that some of those events could be staged, you know, by our own black ops and things like that, you know, coming from NORAD and having this guy say that. But I think there's more to it than that. I'm really hoping there is anyway that, those were the benevolent ones. But I didn't really see much footage of it. You couldn't really tell, you know, what they were. The ships that we see around here are light ships. I mean, they're bright, you know, they're brilliant lights, and they're, you know, you figure out how high some of those things are, they have to be just massive, you know, that are flying overhead. So, you know, I'm not sure whose ships those were, and I'm kind of a little leery, you know, when I hear the, you know, the stories coming from an ex-NORAD guy.
Well, that's true. And you'll remember on that same program, I called up Nick Pope, and I had him on because I said, Nick, you know, you used to be Minister of Defense in England, and now you're kind of on the press side. You don't have a press badge instead of a government badge. I mean, you're in the newsroom with these guys. You're in the green room. You're behind the camera now. What's going on, Nick? How come nobody went for the Pulitzer Prize? Nobody took their helicopter up there with their pilot and with their camera and did a live report on, like, right outside my window is a come on. How come that didn't happen? And it wasn't like they were up there for 2 seconds and flew away. They were up there for, like, 2 hours.
I'm always wondering why somebody didn't go on one of the rooftops there, one of the skyscrapers or whatever, and just, you know, or one of the really high buildings there and film them. I mean, there's like virtually hardly any footage of that whatsoever.
Well, just from the sidewalk in, you know, broad daylight. And even the guy that was running the camera down there, he didn't even zoom in on it. He just, you know, took, like, you know, the man on the street shot.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how, you know, but, you know, you didn't even see a lot of YouTube stuff out there. So somebody was just knocking those. I mean, I know there's got to be a lot of video cameras on that. Like, where did all the footage go?
Well, that's a really good question. And that was a really legitimate sighting. That was like landing on the White House lawn, only better. They hovered over New York City. I guess there's no intelligent life there.
I guess,
you know, when we talk about UFOs, and in my real day job, I do have people, you know, Google, or they know my name, and they know I'm associated with this radio program. They know that I've been to your place, and they'll ask me the question, you don't believe in UFOs, do you? And I finally learned the answer to that question, and I don't even hesitate. I just go back at them with the question, oh, come on. You don't believe we're alone in the universe, do you? And I have yet to have one of them come back and say, of course, yes, we're unique. We're the only ones of our kind in the universe. And by the way, the whole universe revolves around us.
Well, you know, that what's the Drake equation? You know, you look at that, and he didn't even factor in the other dimensions. So, you know, when you factor in the other dimensions, which we know there's at least 11 other dimensions out there, and then add that times, you know, the 200 billion stars in this little Milky Way galaxy and 500 billion galaxies out there, and then factor in the 11 dimensions, when you do the math, to think that we're alone, I think that would be the smallest God you could ever imagine, even in the religious, you know, genre there, that we would be it, you know, just one little planet, you know, in the outermost corner of the Milky Way, you know, and God chose to create life here and nowhere else. It just makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Well, that's true, but it goes beyond that. If you think about the intelligence within, I mean, yeah, we have this biological transducer, and most of the time it works pretty good. Unless I eat too many hot chicken wings, then it doesn't work so well. But the spirit within, the being that animates the biological transducer, that is eternal. And even if you think back, and I was talking with Robin the other day about this, the Anunnaki coming here and monkeying with the genetic code, so to speak, with monkeys or whatever, and ending up with some, you know, hairless sissy ape like us that manages to operate a little bit better with tools and makes a more effective slave. But the intelligence within evidently started showing up after death. In other words, one hairless ape would die, and a generation or so later, the same energy would show back up again. In other words, that spirit was reincarnating. And each time it came back, it got more and more and more intelligent until now we're how many generations into this experiment since the Anunnaki were here 25,000 years ago making us up? A lot.
Yeah.
But
well, you think about it too, DNA isn't fixed. It's always evolving. And now they're tying in the sun cycle to the DNA evolution. And that light is conscious. There's actually consciousness and energy packets coming in constantly. So when you look at that, you know how I try to remember that you probably know who the one experiment they did with the frog and the salamander eggs, and they would shine a light, you know, through the frog DNA into the salamander DNA egg, and it would turn into a frog or whatever. They would.
It was a Russian experiment.
They did all these transfers like that just through light. They transferred DNA through lasers and things of that nature. So, you know, you would think that, the program. What I always ask, my question is, who wrote the program? When you look at DNA and how complicated that is and how it all fits together and what it does and everything else, you go, somebody wrote this program. Somebody created this code, whatever you want to talk about. But I find it even more fascinating is Bruce Lipton's work, where they found out that we only have, 30,000 genes, and we need, 100 plus or 70 plus thousand genes to actually run the body. So now they're finding out about, somewhere around 70% of the body is actually animated by some unseen force that they can't give it a name, being scientists, but it is some kind of a consciousness or an energy or spirit or whatever you want to call it. There's an unseen force that's actually animating the body. You remove that and the body just drops like a, like a potato.
Yeah, Bruce's work was really breakthrough when he discovered the liquid crystal attributes of the cell wall and the fact that a cell could go on doing what it does even without its nucleus. Of course, it couldn't divide, it couldn't survive that because it didn't have any DNA to divide and make another cell. But it could go on eating and drinking and respirating and protecting itself against toxins and all of that until it grew old and died. The interesting thing is that program that's in the cell wall, that liquid crystal of the cell wall, is written by something, and it can't be rewritten once it's rewritten. It's kind of like a EEPROM. But you're exactly right. That original DNA, the original molecule, was an engineered molecule. Somebody built that, physically built it. Now, the fact that there aren't enough genes to make all the proteins that make up the human body leads them to believe, then that means genes make a multiple of proteins, which is possible. But that makes the program even more complex because now you've thrown in the variable of consciousness in the unfolding and refolding of the protein molecules.
Yeah, it goes on and on. But, my thing is just from my own experience, when I see a body, I've gone to funerals and I see a dead body sitting in that coffin and I look at it, there's no one home. There's no life force. There's no energy there. And having, died myself and gone out of body quite a few times and gone off to far distant places, I know without a doubt that I have a spirit that's animating this physical body.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. And so, I look at that and I think about that, okay, if I'm a multidimensional being and I have, a mental, emotional body and a physical body, but I also have a spiritual body that has many levels to it, what's on all those other levels? What is on all those other dimensions? Just looking at the life here in these three dimensions, this third dimensional reality that we're aware of, you look at all the diversity of life here, And then again, you do the, you know, you apply the Drake equation and the other dimensions to that. It's just unbelievable that we could hold on to that position that, you know, UFOs don't exist or there isn't other intelligent life out there, and especially, you know, life that would be more intelligent than we are, because, you know, all we know how to do is war on each other and destroy the planet and act like sheep here, it seems like.
Well, that's true. I think many of us, that is exactly true. But there are a lot of us that know how to do a lot more than that. And there's some, like you said, nobody's home. I saw one the other day at the Department of Motor Vehicles. She was there punching out numbers, processing people's driver's licenses. Mm-hmm. Nobody was home, James.
Yeah.
She was fogging a mirror, but that was about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very sad that people have lost that spirit connection because, you know, they have no joy or love in their lives, and they just become, you know, Autobots here, you know, cruising around through everyday life. And I don't think that was the plan. You know, that wasn't the plan for us.
Well, I don't think it was a plan either. So maybe there are some of us that are kind of camping. We're along the path. We found a bench. We're sitting there, you know, taking a breather. You know, we're Baptists or we're nudists, whatever. We're sitting along the side of the path and we're not progressing. But there are many who are awake. And I'm, by the way, want to put a plug in for the ranch. If you want to get awake, or if you are awake and everyone around you is asleep, you should check out eSteady.org for the next event and get yourself up there, because you're not alone. So,
oh yeah, it's amazing here. We're having so many things happen here because, you know, here this is a place where the veils are very thin, and it's very easy to access those other, you know, levels of self, you might say, or the higher dimensions. And they actually, you know, we rise up to them and they drop in on us. And so it depends on your level of awareness and how much homework you've done basically and on the spiritual path as to what you experience here, you know, just mainly because, you know, there are some people that are just starting out and they have, you know, beginning experiences, you know, but there's other people here that are wide open, especially a lot of the youth that come up here, and they're just totally blown away. You know, they have just incredible experiences because they're open to it, and they've come from those higher planes and dimensions.
And by the way, you stay blown away, just so you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people left here yesterday that came here for the weekend and this morning, and they are just totally blown away, because we had, you know, I stopped counting at around 40 one night, ships that came over, and then another night I think I stopped at about 33 or something, and a lot of them dropped in and powered up. Some of them just went zinging by, you know, several hundred thousand miles an hour, and unbelievable speeds. We had them turning, we had them chasing planes. I mean, everything you can imagine was going on in the skies, and you know, massive power-ups, really low, came over, you know, and got them on film as usual. But most of them just, you would hear these people out there, and you always have a few in the crowd going, well, those are satellites. Well, those are just satellites. And then, you know, they'd up the ante, and then they would power up or make a right angle turn or do something else. And then they go, well, how many satellites are flying over here? And you go, well, we're at about 40 right now, and there's just not that many satellites up there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they would see them turn and everything else, and then it's funny watching them, because they'd finally just, something crazy would happen with one of them. You know, it'd either land on the mountain and morph into three or do something crazy like a right angle turn. And finally they would shift. But what's funny is a lot of them go, well, how do you know those aren't? One guy kept going, how do you know those aren't satellites? And I go, my God, you just saw two or three power up, you know, make right angle turns, slow down, stop, start up. I go, what is it going to take? I said, I can't even believe you're asking me that question anymore. But, you know, some people just get it with a few experiences, and other people have to have, you know, multiple experiences before they can break out of their paradigm, you know, that the old program that they're running.
Well, speaking of getting it and getting out of the paradigm, I heard a rumor, and you can confirm it or deny it or say no comment. I heard a rumor that George Noory had confirmed he was heading to the ranch.
You know, I can't confirm it or deny it because nobody's contacted me yet about that. Now, he might have said it on his show because he's had so many people call in and you know, remind him of his earlier promises, you know, over the past few years about coming up to the ranch and to never come. And then there was, there was a little bit of a riff about, you know, inviting me on the show and then disinvited me by not even letting me know. I mean, I was sitting there waiting by the phone and was never called, which I thought was interesting. But, I don't hold any grudges around that, but I thought it'd be nice to get a little phone call or an email or something saying, hey, you know, we aren't going to have you on the show tonight. But I got in big trouble over that one too, because I put it out on the newsletter that we were going to be on the show. And so I was sitting there with egg on my face basically when I didn't come on, and a lot of people, I guess, got pretty upset with Coast to Coast about that, and it fell back on my shoulders. And I just told them, I said, look, I operate in full integrity here. I was invited to come on the show. I was given a time and date. I forwarded it out on my newsletter, which is customary, and so other people could listen. And I said, maybe you can explain to me where I was operating out of integrity or didn't follow through on my end. And that was the end of the story. But hopefully that's crossed, you know, that's gone by the wayside. But I guess a lot of people got a little upset about not coming on when it was pre-planned or whatever.
Well, you know, it could have been a miscommunication, but I did hear a rumor. Somebody wrote me and said, hey, you're going to go up to James's when George is going up. I said, George is going up finally? Wow, really? He said, yeah, it's going to be that date is classified.
Yeah, it'd be great.
I just thought I'd ask you directly.
Well, if I hear anything, I'll let you know. And I'd love to have you here to give the PhD scientific perspective so he can. Rest assured.
Are you kidding?
That,
I would
you know,
miss
somebody
it.
With a degree is here to explain the obvious.
As the door opens up and a little, or Nordic or whatever. I don't know what kind of people would step out. Probably just like me or you.
Yeah.
And by the way, I got two chat windows going here, and they are really picking up on this neutrino party. I'm sorry. It's the supernova party with neutrino bathing.
All right. They tell me in meditations all the time. They talk about this huge event coming up, and they keep talking about November, but they're not giving me the details on what it is, and they're giving me several dates. And I thought what was really interesting is the dates they gave me were the same dates that this comet Elenin was coming in, and where it would be geo-effective or effective, where it'd be between the Earth and the Sun or whatever. And, you know, I thought that was very surprising because when they gave me these dates, it was quite a while ago. It was long before the Elenin information was coming out, and it did line up with those dates, and it also lines up with the Mayan calendar as well. So, you know, we'll see. You know, apparently there is some just major events coming up and shifts in energy or I don't know the details of them, but, you know, sometimes they don't want to give me the details because some things have to unfold, without interference, you might say.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
I get it. I think I got this rumor cleared up. Somebody said it wasn't George Noory. It was George Kavasilis.
Oh, okay.
So somebody said
he'll be up here. I'm not sure when. I think it's on the 13th or something. He'll be up here doing an event.
Well, there you go. We have the George mystery solved.
great.
So now you listeners, you know, don't burn your frequent flyer miles just yet. Hang in there. It's not Nuri that's headed up there. Although, you know, we kind of get, I don't know, we get enamored with the big media names. Yeah. Is there anyone bigger than us? No, I don't think so. I think we're deeply rooted in this genre, as well as anyone ever has been. And,
oh, yeah, I think the many voices that, you know, you really think about who's been here, who's been up to the ranch. I mean, the who's who list is just phenomenal. And you know, they're talking about it, and they're talking about their experiences here. And with Bob Dean, who just recently came up, and Neil Kramer, and we just had Dolores Cannon up here, and Mary Rodwell, and Lisa Renee, and God, I can go on and on and on. You know, we've had Nick Bajic up here. I'm trying to think of who we haven't had up here that is a who's who, you might say, in this field. They've all been up here, and they've seen the ships. Even Wendell Steven was here, but he's crossed over. He's, you know, passed on. You know,
what about Linda Moulton Howe?
Have you can you remember any? I know there's quite a few others that have been up here, but good old Renato Lingotto, he's our South American, you know, correspondent.
Oh, he was awesome.
He films the ships every year. Conferences that we have here, but the list is just so long, not to mention the 300 people that come to these conferences that participate in, you know, intention experiments to bring the ships in, and they do. They fly, you know, fly in right on cue, you know, as you yourself witnessed. I think you were out there when that pink-orange one came in with John Riley.
Oh, yeah, it came in right out of the west, at sundown, nice and slow and low and just all multicolored. It was awesome.
Yeah, right after the intention experiment. Imagine that, flies right over the conference building. And, you know, the funny thing about this other one on my birthday, which was the 22nd, I did a meditation, and I said, you know, I just want a really good low-flying one again, flying over, you know, right over the house, right over the trees, and power up. And sure enough, you know, it did. Came in right over from the south, right over the trees, and just powered up. It lit up like crazy and got the whole thing on film. But, you know, it's so crazy when you do this redundantly, you know, as we did with, like, Paranormal State. We did it with ABC. We did it with Fox News. We've had all these people out here, and the ships come exactly when and where we say they are, and they get them on film. One would think that maybe there's contact already going on, and it's not somewhere out in the far distant future.
No, it's happening right now. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, why now? Why is it happening now? Well, it's been happening for a long, long time, and it's been recorded in all kinds of ages. But if you really want to know the answer to that, the Earth, the solar system, is arriving in a place that is very unique in the galaxy. We call it the galactic plane. Now, you know, some people will write in and say, oh, well, yeah, my calendar ends every year on December 31st. And you know what? The next year starts over the next day with no changes whatsoever. I get that. I hear that kind of energy out there. But this is not a calendar that it was made by religions. This is a calendar that was made by mathematics, using the sequences of the moon to count the travels of the solar system around the zodiac back to a beginning point, which we are about to begin again. This area in the galaxy has a unique set of frequencies, which if you just pick up any newspaper, of course you can read space.com if you want to, but you can read it in Drudge Report, you can read it in the Wall Street Journal. Astronomers are measuring a what they call energetic particles. Gee, I sounded what was her name? Right on the tip of my tongue, I could see her wonderful face. I want to say Leanne Rimes, is that that's not right? But anyway, she uses the word energetic frequencies all the time.
Lisa,
anyway,
Renee,
Yeah, Lisa Renee, right. Oh, I sound okay. Like Renee. So these energetic frequencies are bathing this planet. We're going through them at the rate of about 18.5 miles per second. And those frequencies are coming through our atmosphere, as I already described to you, that green glow that's up there. If you've been off planet, you can see it. If you look at one of the space shuttle pilots' pictures that he took during the last docking of the Atlantis, you'll see it. It isn't there all the time, but it is there now. And it is not caused by the solar wind, people. It's caused by energetic particles that are interacting with the chemistry of our upper atmosphere. And it's creating this green glow because that's the only thing it knows to do is to put off that kind of light. But when those frequencies get into our DNA, get into the tissues of our bodies, it's beginning to change the evolution of our physical bodies. It's also affecting our spirits. Have you felt confused lately? Have you had your short-term memory affected? Have you had your, are you experiencing moodiness, forgetfulness, absent-mindedness? Are you falling asleep easy? Are you sleeping longer than you used to sleep? That's what I'm talking about. Those frequencies are promoting that kind of activity. It's trying to awaken your dream state. It's trying to awaken your higher self. Hello, you're not mortal. That's what we're going through, don't you think, James?
Oh, yeah, and I noticed, too, people, you know, speaking of dream states, people are just having crazy, crazy dreams, you know, some really powerful, like, teaching dreams and dreams of experiencing or remembering, you know, higher dimensions and existences, you know, as well as some what I call low-level dreams or astral influences where they're having, you know, just crazy stuff, nightmares and things of that nature. And, you know, some dreams are just process dreams where they're processing, you know, events and things that they, you know, during the day or during the week they've dealt with. So, but that process or that opening seems to be exponential, and people that used to never even dream before are just having very, very vivid dreams. And I know the higher dimensional beings that are assisting humanity right now are working in those dream states too. You know, help awaken and heal, you know, humanity, the earth. And, you know, which brings us up to, it was quite a while back, but we had this huge, there's an Orion Council of Light mothership hovering over Portland State University. And we actually got the footage of it. A friend of mine filmed it, and he got the sound of the ship as well, which sounded like a cat purring in space. It was really deep. And we asked, you know, what they were doing there. And, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they said higher learning, you know, and we're having a telepathic contact with them and asked them, you know, why they were there. And they said that they're working with people in their dream state and, you know, conditioning people for events coming up in the future. So they have that knowledge when it happens and they're not all freaked out. But they talked a lot about that. And then we found out Jim De La Tosa actually did, some research into the sound, and he said there's some code in there. They have no idea what it is, but there's some kind of code in those tones, and you know they couldn't decipher what it was or what was going on. But I know those really deep low tones are actually healing tones too as well.
Well, here's the thing about these dream states, they're beginning to encroach upon the conscious mind, as opposed to unconscious, as opposed to the sleeping mind. The waking mind is beginning to see these kinds of resonances, and I notice it because I kind of live in both worlds. I live in the paranormal world. As I go around the country and lecture about the Inner Earth Expedition, or I lecture about remembering the future, but I also see it in my daytime world, where I really, you know, have to concentrate on the engineering that I'm doing, the science that I'm doing, because it makes money for the companies that hire me. You know, they don't want to hear about UFOs. They don't want to hear about higher dimensions or higher consciousness. But let me throw this little caveat in there. When we go to eat lunch or they take me to dinner, it is amazing how the conversation that they lead tends to swing in this direction. Even the mechanics will come about and say, you know, I've had the strangest feeling lately. Really? Tell me about it. And here we go. We're right in the paranormal world again. People are being affected by this in all walks of life. People I would never expect are now waking up. They're feeling it. They know something is going on.
You know, I agree. It's kind of like a race. I just see, you know, there's the powers that be trying to suppress all this. And, you know, they're doing their thing because that's the last thing they want people to do is be awake. And considering what they've done, you know, they don't want people to wake up to what they've done, that's for sure. But, you know, you have the Earth's process herself. I mean, she's ascending. She's going to the next level. And then you have this divine intervention going on. And then you have the collective consciousness and, you know, and individual free will making choices daily. And when you put all these timelines together or events together, you know, it's creating our future. And it just seems like it's this four-way race going on. You know, I have no doubt whatsoever who's going to win it, you know, in the end. But I know the old program, you know, the old tyranny program, the old enslavement, the enslavement through dependency, the manufactured lack, and, you know, all these other programs right now are all folding in on themselves, and they're not going to be able to make the shift or match the Earth's frequency as she goes, you know, through her process. So I have no doubt at all where this is going to end up. You know, what I don't know is how it's all going to unfold and the choices that people are going to make in this unfolding process.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Come on. I thought you were up on all that. Yeah, I think that's part of the fun of it is, you know, somebody was saying to me, well, it's going to be so much better in the next life. I said, why? They said, because there won't be all this, you know, unknowns and everything. And I said, hey, don't you think that's kind of the reason we come here? I mean, how fun would it be if we knew the ending to every movie? We knew the last page of every book. We knew the outcome of every election. I don't think that'd be mysterious at all. I think that's part of the reason we come here, is to be truncated, to be limited, to struggle with it. I actually think this could be heaven.
Well, I'm hoping there's something a little better than what's going on here, but, you know, I do believe that you can have heaven on earth, and I feel like I've pretty much created that here. People that come here just love the energy. They sink right in, and you know, all the healing that goes on here, and you know, it's a place living in harmony with nature and versus against it, and, you know, it's a very pristine area. But, you know, there are these other folks around us that are just totally starting to rape the forest here, and you know, all the stops have been pulled off the forest protection, and it's just unbelievable. You see what's going on, you go, God, you know, you guys are living in paradise. Why do you want to turn it into a desert? You know, why, you know, they come up here and they want to live in the forest, but at the same time they want to turn everything into a pasture for their horses, or you know, they want to get the money for the lumber on the forest land that they bought, but they originally came up here because they love the forest.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is, and they think they're the only ones doing it. You know, well, I'll take out this 100 acres, and nobody's going to notice because there's trees all around me, and then the next guy does it, and the next guy does it, and pretty soon you've got no forest left.
Yeah, well, deforestation isn't really a threat. The real threat is retreats of enlightenment. That's what you really have.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's always dumbfounded me. You know, they can spray us with chemtrails. You know, they can clean out our bank accounts, and they can you know, put us in debt up to our ears, just print, you know, billions and trillions of dollars worth of money and pay off, you know, all these banksters and you know, they can do all these things, but heck, you know, you have a, you know, you try to awaken and heal people and create a retreat center, boy, you are pure evil. You know, they are going to come after you.
Yeah, that's that is so strange when I see that. And I do, I see it, because you have this big comparison between, you know, filling up your garage with toys or capturing the oil or, you know, cheap gas or whatever. And then you have energies and solutions and things like that that will make life cleaner, cheaper to operate, more renewable. And that's the kind of stuff that can't come to fruition. It doesn't get any financing. It can't make it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, too, they've got the, you know, the Just Us Department, you know, which is a good old boy network. But, you know, they could just pull all these heinous acts out there and get away with it. But, you know, boy, you just step out of line one little bit and, you know, you have all the agencies coming down on your head, you know, if you're not part of the herd. You know,
Dennis Kucinich be head of the Justice Department and Ron Paul as president.
Oh, yeah. That would be a good one. I think here's my idea. My idea would be, you know, Ron Paul's president, maybe Dennis Kucinich is vice president. And, God, what's the wrestler's name? I keep
Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, Jesse Ventura as, you know, Secretary of State or whatever. And, you know, you'd clean up this place really fast.
I like that a lot. Hey, James, let's take a quick break. You want to hang through the break with me? We'll cover new energy and a couple things, and then we'll let you go. All right, we'll be right back after this. Don't go away. We'll play a little Muse because we're feeling revolutionary tonight. Don't forget about that supernova party. I think it's a good idea. We should all go neutrino bathing. right. Welcome back to X Squared Radio, third and final hour. July 24th, 2011. Our AccuWindow forecast is now in the mid-30s. It has finally quit raining. Maybe the internet will settle down. By the way, the first supernova that history records is thought to have occurred in 185 BC when a star 8,200 light years away exploded. Chinese astronomers make explicit note of the sudden appearance. Romans may also have made more cryptic references to it, and astronomers have since located the remnants of the exploded star, confirming the accuracy of the ancient accounts. By knowing the distance and the standard luminosity of a supernova, we can calculate in retrospect just how bright the star must have appeared to 11th century observers. Of course, they probably had a lot darker skies than we do, not much light pollution. On the magnitude scale used by astronomers, it was about a minus 7.5, which is about twice as bright as the space shuttle when it goes over. It puts its brightness a little less than halfway between that of Venus and that of the full moon. And that was 8,000 some odd light years away. We're talking 640 light years away, more than 10 times closer. There's no doubt that it would have been a truly dazzling sight in the spring of 1006. That was 54 years before the Norman conquest, for those of you who are up on history. People could probably have read manuscripts at midnight by its light, if that is, of course, they could read. The supernova of 1054 wasn't quite as dramatic. Now, keep in mind, that's 48 years later, another supernova. And it seems to go almost entirely unrecorded in Europe, although there is some thought that records of the new star made by Irish monks got corrupted into allegorical accounts of the Antichrist. Still, the rest of the world just saw it okay, with records popping up in China, Japan, Korea, Persia, and the Americas. Astronomers of the time period wrote that it could be seen in daylight for over 3 weeks and remained visible in the night sky for nearly 2 years. A pair of supernovas in 1572 and 1604 were extensively studied by two generations of legendary astronomers, Tycho Brahe and Johannes Kepler. I'm sure the latter name is familiar to you. Since then, the Milky Way hasn't had any supernovas visible from Earth, and so our night sky has remained rather tediously ordinary. By the way, Betelgeuse is the left shoulder of Orion, one of the easily recognized constellations. So, with this left shoulder star missing, what will the new configuration be called? Orion with jacket, maybe. That's what we'll call it. Anyway, I propose, right here on X Squared Radio, first time global premiere, right here, I propose a supernova party. It is a global party. And there are very few rules to this party, but we will be doing nightly neutrino bathing. And the other rules are no fighting, no weapons. Everyone on Earth must lay their weapons down, and nobody can go through an entire week without some kind of adult beverage just to make it relaxing. All right, this hour we're going to talk about energy. We're going to talk about resonance. We're going to talk about the resistance of the man in letting new energy and new clean energy and renewable energy devices come to fruition. Welcome back, James, to X Squared Radio.
Good to be back.
I am, of course, in the middle of this this race, I guess you might want to call it a war. Almost 6 years ago, we built our first real electric vehicle And it worked really well. It went over 100 miles. You could drive it on the freeway. But it was the conversion of a standard General Motors big Detroit vehicle. To come up with a new vehicle, to bring something new and fresh into the industry, was a little bit more of a challenge than I expected it to be. When my career was in the automotive industry, we brought ideas on a regular basis from paper to finished vehicles that people could drive down the freeway and are now filling up junkyards everywhere from coast to coast. That's how old they are. But this time around, it's a little bit different. This time around, we probably have one of the highest demanded vehicles in the United States today. We have a light electric pickup truck, which who wouldn't want a light electric pickup truck, especially at a price of $25,000. But we're having a devil of a time getting this thing to market. And I wanted to kind of get some ideas from you as to why you think we're having such a difficult time getting this to market and what you think will happen if it does get to market.
Well, you know, the I'm trying to remember, what was that? There's a movie about that guy that built his own car and tried to compete with the other automotive industries.
Yeah, that was the Tucker.
Yeah, the Tucker, exactly. You know, you're probably, you know, the modern-day Tucker out there and having that same experience. You know, it's like, you know, you build a better mousetrap and you don't go through the ones that are established, well-established out there. I mean, they're going to see to it that doesn't get out or they're going to try to copy it or steal it or whatever else, but... that seems to be ongoing. This competition consciousness versus doing what's highest and best good for humanity and the earth it's gone epidemic. You know, the greed and the competition and the control and stopping, you know, any kind of new thought or new engineering or new all this stuff. It seems if you don't go through, you know, the powers that be or the standard people that are out there that are producing this, you know, you're just going to run into all kinds of trouble. And I think one of the only things you can do is really go public with this big time and tell people it's available and who knows, maybe get some private financing behind it, you know, to get it out. But I know when they built the Tucker, I mean, look what happened to him. They kept cutting, you know, his materials, they did everything they could to shut him down. And it seems like eventually they did, but I don't know. I think that the American people right now are educated enough. They know the electric car works. And they know, you know, we need to get away from fossil fuel. And a lot of them know that there's even more, you know, higher technology out there too that, you know, you wouldn't need to plug it in. You know, you wouldn't need batteries. They know that technology is out there as well. But I don't know if you got that birthday wish I sent out. You know, I sent out an email about my birthday wish on the newsletter. And that was one of the things I wanted. You know, everybody kept asking me, what do you want for your birthday? What do you want for your birthday? You know, and I said, you know, basically, I want to see the clean, you know, fuelless energy technologies come out, all the earth-friendly technologies. I want to see that come out. I want to see the wars end, you know, people come home. I want to see, you know, I just give a big list of all the things that are possible. And there's no reason why they can't happen other than, you know, people in the war industry or people in the auto industry or people in the pharmaceutical industry. You know, all these things, they're stopping, you know, the cures for a lot of diseases. They're perpetuating the wars, and they're stopping, you know, the things necessary to clean up the environment. And so I just put it together in a big birthday wish and put it out there to tell people, you know, all of these things are possible. We just need to rise up and demand it.
Well, I'm with that. Now, you mentioned that the powers that be, you know, don't want to see this happen. And last night on your program, we had a phone call. I think that his name was Steve. He called in and said that he thought that Obama was a higher being and that we should not give him such a hard time. I know I talked about the string disappearing in the back of his neck, and that's not really true. I mean, the strings, everyone knows, are attached to his hands and his feet. But anyway, I think that when I listen to the words of our president, and he talks about small business, and he talks about innovators, he talks about us as job creators, which we are. I mean, small business, we are the job creators. We are the poster children for this recovery. But then we turn around and look at $22.5 billion pumped out like a printing machine from Washington, not from the Fed, but from Washington into green technology. Not a dime, not a penny went to small business. It all went to global corporations that were already multi-billion dollar companies. They are not the job creators. So where's the disconnect between the words we heard come out of the president's mouth and what the government actually did?
Well, you know, that was the one thing I told the guy. I said, well, forget about what he says. Look at what he does. And that should give you a clue, because, you know, that is the main problem we've run into over and over again, is that they say one thing, do another. And that's been going on for eons. But the I got a couple of emails, you know, from him as well. And he was talking about all these people, I guess, I don't know, Sheldon Neidl, all these other people are all saying that Obama is the saint and he's the savior of the world and he's going to suddenly awaken and all the bad guys are going to go away and you know, he's, you know, going to basically save the world. And I told him, I said, I would love to see that. I would actually, you know, I would be in the stands rooting for that. If I saw one movement in that direction, you know, and then I said, so, you know, basically not to get, you know, I don't like to get into politics. I don't even have a TV. I don't deal with that, but I do pay attention, you know, what's happening. But, you know, the bottom line is we were supposed to be out of Iraq. You know, we were supposed to end these wars and spending all these billions and billions of dollars on these senseless wars, you know, using the military for the corporate brute squad. You know, that was supposed to be ending. He was supposed to repeal the Patriot Act, you know, and give us back our Constitution. And he is a constitutional lawyer. So, you know, everybody was hoping that he would be moving in that direction. Okay, that even got worse. They've even added to it, making it even worse. And then, you know, you think it, you look at, I'm trying to think of the transparency thing. You know, I don't see any transparency whatsoever, especially when, you know, they have Senate meetings asking where the money went, and they go, we don't have to tell you, you know. And these are the same guys that pretty much created the problem are now in his cabinet, you know, the major fiscal policies and everything that put us in the toilet we're in are the same guys that he's appointed. So, you know, I look at, you know, the economy, you know, where that's gone. I'm trying to see one area that has not been hijacked or, you know, perpetuated. It's like Bush on steroids, basically, is where he's been going. So anyway, I mean, being that said, you know, I'm not for any party. I'm not against any party. I'm just looking at the obvious, you know, and stating the obvious here. And, you know, I would love to see the wars end. I would love to see, you know, the inventors of these fuelless energy technologies and these electric cars and all these things that could clean up the environment get funded. You know, all that war money could go to that. You know, it could, you know, boost up the Social Security, you know, situation there. And, you know, I have to ask, too, the Social Security, everybody put money into that. Everybody, the baby boomers, everybody put money into that. That money is supposed to be there. And the question we have to ask is, where to go. You know, we can't blame it on the baby boomers. If the baby boomers put all that money in there, then there should be a huge amount of money in there. You know,
yeah, you're right. But the way
sense, the excuses they're using. So we have to ask, well, what did they do with the money? You know, and they, same thing. You know, those we've chosen to take care of us have chosen to take care of themselves. That's where the money went. End of story. And that's an ongoing problem, is that our leadership has become completely self-serving. They have lost all connection with the people, and it's been shown to us redundantly. And I think it's time, you know, for the people to start saying, "Hey, you know, what's going on here? I mean, this unbridled greed and separation game that's going on here. The total disconnect from the people has reached an epidemic proportion now, and it's unsustainable."
It really is. I mean, because we're not talking about a few tax dollars. We're not talking about a few billion. We're talking about a few trillion.
Yeah.
We're talking about the country being something like $14 trillion in debt. The interest alone on that is enough to finance other nations.
Mm-hmm.
You look at that.
That's a debt that can't be paid back. They have to just keep increasing it and increasing and increasing it. Till pretty soon, you know, we're going to be paying, taxes that are just ridiculous. And, you know, that's happening on a local level, too. What's happening here on a local level is that although all the property values, you know, went down because of, you know, the powers that be, the way they've handled the economy. Okay, so we have the big housing market crash. All the property values go down, but the taxes went up. And it makes no sense. It's, you should be taxed according to the value, you know, of your property. And they're doing some things in Portland here. I just found out there's this huge sector there of land that the city decided to rezone. And so they rezoned it, and then they went back, and I don't know how they can do that. They went back 10 years, and they said, well, you know, we rezoned this area, so the property values are, you know, everything is of much higher value now, and so you owe us 10 years back taxes, and they're going after these people, for 10 years back taxes. You know, it's just like you hear about these war stories and seeing them firsthand myself and myself dealing with the county and things like that. I'm wondering what has gone wrong with this system and on every level, the people that we've chosen to govern.
Yeah, well, you just had it happen in California, too. California passed this new tax on Internet transactions and small businesses that rely on them. Well, Amazon has 25,000 small businesses that run on Amazon affiliation, which means they list books on their websites with Amazon links. When someone goes to their website, clicks on a link, buys the book from Amazon, Amazon pays them a quarter or something like that. With this law, it put 25,000 small businesses out of business overnight. Done.
You think about, okay, when the parasite gets too big, and it kills the host, where's it going to go? And that's where we're at right now, is that the parasite is so big.
It sure is.
There's no saying the dragon is too fat to fly. It's gorged itself, you know, on the host, which is the people, and it's done it to an extent where there's no way it can sustain itself. So you know, the beast is going to implode. There's no possible way it can continue,
right.
And anybody that continues to serve this beast and work with this beast is going to go down with it. They don't care about you or your families or anything, and that's been made really clear with, you know, kicking everybody out of their houses and taking their houses and all the foreclosures going down. You know, the money that was given to the banksters would have cleared all of those debts, but did they? No, they just gave themselves bonuses. And
but we knew that was going to happen because for 20 years, the banks were pushing refinance, refinance, pull your capital out of your house. You know, don't let that equity build up. Go ahead and get a second mortgage. Go ahead and refinance that house. Come on, we'll do 100% refinance. We'll do 125% refinance. We already knew this was coming because the banks engineered it to come. People that had their houses almost paid for went back to the bank, lowered their interest rate, put a bunch of money in their pocket, and promptly lost their homes to foreclosure. Mm-hmm. Then we already knew that was going to happen. And I was going to say earlier, you know, when you go to Washington, D.C., and you drive around or you're doing business there, you're visiting the Department of Energy or the Department of Education or Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, or you're visiting the Department of the Interior, one thing you figure out in a hurry, none of those people even know we have a president. These departments and agencies, these administrations, they are entities in and of themselves. They are completely funded with budgets you never get to see. It's taxation without representation, and those people are the ones spending your money and turning around and asking for more taxes. It isn't in the hands of the president. It's not in the hands of Congress. It's in the hands of the bureaucracies. That's who's running the country.
Yeah, and the bureaucracy is there to serve the bureaucracy. It's so simple. Basically, it's that, you know, when you just break it down to basics and look at it, the system serves the system. It's not really there to serve the people. It's there to serve the system, and it's there to enforce that the system is served, and it's created. It's just an entity of its own, and you know, when people wake up to this, which they are over and over again, going, "Whoa, whoa, wait a second! This is like insanity." You know, this is going to throw us out of our homes. It's going to throw us out of our businesses. It's going to throw us out of our jobs. Where are you going with this? You know, and I think we're hitting that point, that threshold, where people are just saying, "You know, this is pure insanity, and I don't want to participate anymore."
And I'm not seeing,
I think,
James,
when enough people just say, you know, I'm not going to participate in this more and stop serving the beast will end up, you know, doing what's inevitable, and that is imploding on itself.
I'm not seeing it, though. I'm not seeing that outrage among those millions of people that lost their homes, amongst millions of people who are seeing defaulted student loans, who are seeing their jobs go away, or are going from full-time to part-time, or losing their jobs altogether. I'm not seeing the outrage. I'm not seeing that these poll numbers reflect that the people get it. They don't understand that the direction that the nation is going in, and I'm not talking about just the nation. I'm also talking about the state levels. A lot of these states don't get it either. And the people are in charge, but they have forgotten all about that.
Yeah, they definitely have. And you know, but there's a lot of people. You hear that, you know, like we had Neil Kramer here, his work, Max Egan, you know, and a lot of these just brilliant minds coming out. And just breaking this down and talking about, you know, peaceful noncompliance and, like, don't support things that are harmful to humanity, the earth. Don't act against your fellow man. Don't involve yourself in any of these programs, you know. And they've just been laying this out over and over again. And there's so many people coming out with this now that, you know, I think we're getting close to where people are just, you know, at that threshold. And I'm really seeing things between now and November, some major events happening that are going to kind of push the envelope on this, and you know, we'll see where it goes from there.
Well, I have immense respect for Neil. As an outsider, he's come in, he's looked at our system. Of course, he has, you know, the history of his own nation and the path that they went on as a backdrop. But he's looked at our nation, and he has got some very, very common sense ideas. I love the idea of passive resistance. I think it's awesome. It's nonviolent. We're speaking with our money. We're speaking with our feet. We don't go into certain businesses. We do business with ones who support our way of thinking. You know, earlier I was going to say we did see a few grants come up through the ranks and finally make it out. But they were all originated, and you're going to die when you hear this, They were all originated by George Bush Jr. They were all initiated by George W. Bush. And by the time they got through the legal, the interpretation, got written up as opportunities and published, Obama was president. Well, when these things finally ran their course in the first 1 or 2 years of his presidency, Obama gave all the money to the global corporations that were supporting his presidency. None of the money went to the energy programs for which they were written. But it was actually George W. Bush that got that first billion or two headed our way. Mm-hmm. And I really had high hopes that it was going to happen.
Yeah, it seems like whenever you have that big chunk of change sitting out there, it's going to get hijacked. You know, it's just like putting a bowl of cherries, you know, in front of a kid. You know, when he sees that bowl of cherries, you know, these other groups are going to just snatch it up. And that's just the way it is, unless you have somebody, you know, of integrity that is going to be watching the bowl of cherries. And we just don't have that.
No, you're right. You know, we live in a republic, and we have elected representatives to go to government and represent us, and something happens when they get there. It's like, what neighborhood? I don't remember any neighborhood. The only thing I see are the inside of these four walls of Congress, and here, I'm going to vote the big D, or I'm going to vote the big R, and I no longer represent my people in Florida, or Texas, or Tennessee, or Mississippi, or California, or New Mexico. I don't represent them anymore.
Oh, and also, too, the major corporations come in, and they said, oh, well, yeah, you're in my state. Okay, well, what do you want, you know? And they'll say, well, if you can get this through, we got a nice chunk of change for you, and we also have a job here after you retire, you know, as a major corporate executive, and this is how it goes. And they go, sounds great, let's do it, you know. And every time that happens, any kind of small business or the little people take a big hit. And as you're saying, you know, the people we've chosen representatives completely forget, you know, who put them in there, who put them in office. But some of them may actually end up being reminded, you know, who put them in there when they're voted out of office. You know, so.
Well, yeah, fortunately we have a reset program. It's called The Vote. And yeah. If we could just get it out and make it happen, which we did. I think we really did. In 2010, we sent a message. We sent a lot of liberals packing. And maybe, in 2012, when this election happens, we're going to send a few senators packing. We're going to send a few more congressmen packing. And maybe, just maybe, we'll have the wherewithal to put a decent president in there that will lead the way to fiscal responsibility. And I don't really care who it is. I don't care if it's a Democrat or a Republican. As long as they can see that we have a way out of this morass of debt, and it is to dissolve some of these bureaucracies, like the TSA, like the Department of Education, like alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Get rid of them. Turn that stuff over to the states. Let the states handle that at their own budgets. Split up that money, send it to the states, and tell them to take care of the problem on their own level. Mm-hmm. Get those darn federal agents that act like the Gestapo searching our underwear and our shoes and making us give up our sovereignty and our privacy in front of everybody. There's no reason for that. In fact, in engineering, James, we have this theory. We used to give our engineers little tweakers, little tiny pocket screwdrivers, and they would go around and make adjustments on all the equipment all day long, you know, to try to bring it, you know, closer to specification. And what happened was we actually got more variation. We got more scrap because people were messing with it all the time. When we took those engineers out, we took the screwdrivers away from them, everything settled down and everything started running correctly. What we need to do is take these bureaucracies out, take the TSA out. Let us have our airports back just the way it was. I can tell you this right now. nobody is going to hijack another airplane in this country. The passengers will not allow it to happen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. I just think, you know, you were telling the story the other day on my show about the woman in the airport, and I guess I'm trying to remember exactly what she said. Didn't she say, I'm not going for that, and, you know, the stop the line or whatever, and nobody did anything about it, you know, and she said, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do this groping program or get my DNA scattered or whatever, you know, by their X-ray machine.
Last time I flew, they have the radiation scanner, you know.
Yeah.
The guy says, are you familiar with the scanner? I said, oh, yes. I glow in the dark slightly less than you do. He said, what do you mean? I said, they didn't tell you? You guys are being irradiated by this machine all day long. I hope you're not planning on having any kids.
The good yeah, is exactly.
I get
you know,
to
and, walk- you know, these guys, there's an old saying, you know, do unto others, you know. And same thing, you know, with a lot of the traffic cops, you know, they had that radar gun. Well, they're shooting that radar gun, right, and giving all these tickets, and then they'd put it in their lap, you know, when they were doing it. And then all of a sudden they started getting all this, you know, testicular cancer and all these other problems, you know, from the radar gun. And you see this over and over again. You know, there's many cases where they're given technology. You know, this is going to be able to catch more people, you know, bring in more revenue. You know, this is going to make things safe. And usually the people that are operating that equipment are expendable, basically. You know, they don't really have any real safety consciousness around the people operating the equipment. And you really look at some of the people that they do hire to be TSA agents. I mean, I don't know where they find these people, but
you have to laugh.
You know, a lot of them have a big chip on their shoulders. They think, you know, they think they are God now that they have that little uniform on. You know, it's.
I just read a story in Drudge Report a couple of days ago that Big Sis Janet Napolitano is telling everybody that it's white middle class. I'm sorry, white middle-aged males are the new profile for terrorism. What the hell? Are you kidding me? White middle-class males are the absolute epitome of patriotism. Mm-hmm. Most of us are veterans. Most of us have lived by the sweat of our brow our entire lives. We believe in the stars and stripes forever. We know what terrorists sound like. We know what they look like. You want the approval to profile? You got it. Just leave the little blonde and the little old lady in the wheelchair alone.
Yeah, leave the 4-year-old alone. You know.
Yeah, leave the kids alone. For crying out loud, let our kids travel anyway.
You know, I've seen these things, these statements they've made and the videos they've made, and you just look at them, you go, what is wrong with, who are these people, and what is wrong with them, and they are not us, you know, they are something else, you know, energetically they are something else. I'm not sure what that something is, but something else is pulling their strings, and you know, I think about it in my, you know, if I went to an airport and worked under security, I'd be really checking the bags and everything else. I wouldn't be groping little girls and little boys and old ladies in wheelchairs and things like that. I would focus my attention on you know, the bags and the other things like that. And but you see these other people, it's like, and what they're doing there is just pure insanity. And I think it's a part of dehumanization where they want you to just accept, you know, you need to accept being herded like cows. You need to accept being fondled. You know, you need to accept being isolated anytime, you know, and you know, check every orifice, you know, they just want us to give up. It seems like,
But we've been through that, James. In 1939, 1940, 1941, the only thing missing is the little tattoo on our wrist. We've already been through that. We've already been herded like cattle. We've already been searched head to toe. We've already been showered and gassed and trained away because we're a threat to the government. We're done with that.
Yeah, all they need is the, you know, the hip boots and the little swastika, and you know, they're pretty much behaving that same way.
Yeah. Well,
but you know, to me, you look at it, you say, okay, at what point do people wake up and go, you know, the people that I am against are my people. You know, the people I'm doing this to could be my brother, it could be my little sister, my little brother, or it could be my neighbor, you know. It could be, and sometimes it is, you know, the person I'm being told to arrest for some menial thing that means nothing, you know, is might just be, you know, my neighbor, and hey, maybe I've done the same thing, and I might be arrested next,
they brainwash them.
People are just going to have to really rethink what's unfolding around them and see if they want to participate anymore, because that's the only way it's going to stop.
Look at what happened down in Texas a couple of months ago.
And people taking a real hard look at where things are going and where they were, and do we have a republic, and did I take an oath to serve, you know, God and country, and how is this serving, or have I been duped into, you know, doing the work of the corporate brute squads, you know, or whatever, you know, am I part of that program?
And if you just go back and read Benjamin Franklin, you know, he says, don't give up your liberty for security, because if you do, soon you're not going to have either one.
Exactly.
You know, I look at the bottom line.
It's, what's that program they run, you know, where they create the problem and become the solution, and you know, but you know, it's very obvious that the direction where this is going is going right down that road. You know, we were talking about that urban council that Obama just signed into law with his executive order. I think that's quite interesting that he has the Department of Defense, the TSA, all of these people, you know, on this council that are going to go around to all these urban communities and farms and things like that and start telling people that if they're not producing up to par, you know, they are going to step in. On what level? I don't know. Are they going to take your land away? Are they going to force you to use GMO seeds? Are they going to... you know what? How are they going to do this? I don't know exactly what the details are and how they're going to do this. But you know, the old saying, "We're here to help." Whenever you hear that, you know, we're the government, we're here to help. You just go, "Oh crap!" You know, I'm going to have to pay for this big time down the road, and some loss in funds or freedom. But you know, I think that's a real spooky event there. You know, going down. And. And I just saw a video of with, you know, it's a Homeland Security video or whatever, and they were just showing how, you know, you don't know what a terrorist looks like. Could be anybody. If you see anything whatsoever going on, you know, anybody you think that might be harboring any ideas or you know, carrying a backpack or anything, you know, be sure and call, you know, be sure and call in. You know, so... you know, it's pretty ridiculous, but
that old watch your neighbor, you know, and let us know. We saw that happen, you know, in Nazi Germany when the Germans would do this thing, and people would call in and turn in their neighbors, you know, if they had their lights on too long, or if they had two cars, or if the guy had a radio antenna on top of his house, or something like that. They would turn them in, and they would turn them in for two reasons. One is to divert the government's gaze from them, and the other was to try to win brownie points, special status in the government. And that's why people do it. You see little kids do it, too. I mean, it's natural behavior, but the government plays in on it. I'm kind of reminded of, I think it was a couple of months ago, Texas said, well, we're going to pass a law. There's going to be no more groping in any of our airports in Texas. And so the FAA, the Federal Aeronautics Administration, said, well, that's fine. You can go ahead and do that, and then nobody in Texas is going to fly. Because we're not going to let your planes leave your airports and go to any other airport in our country. How about that?
Yeah.
So it was a big, wanker contest there. And frankly, I think Texas could have won. What has to happen is it has to be organized. The people have to stand up as a people all at one time and say, we're not flying today. I have to be somewhere. I got a meeting. I got my granddaughter. I got an operation, whatever, but I'm going to put it off because I'm joining my brothers and sisters and saying no more. I want my country back.
Yeah, exactly. Like that little lady in the airport said, you know, I want my country back. And, you know, if people do the research, they'll find out that all of these threats are homegrown, you know, even – you know, I hate to say it, but even Al-Qaeda is a homegrown organization and, you know, funded by some of our agencies. So, you know, do the research, check it out, you know, and see who these people are that are supposedly this big threat, and see what kind of part they play in taking away our freedoms and, you know, turning this place into a Nazi state. And you'll see you can't do it without a threat. And so if you don't have a threat, you got to create a threat. And you can't have a war without an enemy, so you have to keep creating enemies to keep the, you know, the war machine going. And I think people are just getting fed up with it, especially when they don't have a job and they don't have a house and they don't, you know, and they no longer have a country. You know, you would think we'd be taking care of our home first, and you know, we can't afford these wars. We can't continue in the direction we're going. And that's the bottom line. But you know, we seem to be going in that direction. And I think it's you know, just like in Rome, you know, look what happened to them. You know, they had military extended out all over the globe, and they were so overextended that, you know, Rome burned basically, but you know, fell apart. So same old thing. I think we need to start, you know, taking care of our own people, taking care of our own infrastructure, you know, stop with it, just this unbridled greed and giveaways and you know, get back to the people, you know, that...
You just got to be careful what you say. I mean, I'll bet you anything that lady's picture is now on the poster board of every single TSA training school in the country. This is what you have to watch for, people. One person can cause a riot. So if this person shows up at your airport, you make sure either don't touch her or you make sure to bag her and get her out of that airport before she has a chance to open her mouth. She is now on the no-fly list.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm not on it. You know, it's, you know, all the, you know, just by being a little vocal there. But I, you know, basically I've stopped flying. I've turned down a lot of events and I've just stopped flying because I refuse to get groped. I refuse to get irradiated. And, these people that are doing that, I have no respect for them whatsoever. And, I don't want to put myself in that position, you know, because I cannot be amicable.
The only solace that I have is I know they're only going to live for 2 years because that radiation is going to kill them. And then they'll have to get more agents.
Yeah, wait till those lawsuits start flying. Wait till they find out, that although that was a good short run, being able to watch everybody naked, you know, that now you're not going to have any equipment to do anything about it. You know,
now your eyeballs are going to fall out of your sockets. So tell me, the ranch, you know, it's a place of sanctuary. It's a place of meeting and teaching and sharing and a place where we can go to talk openly with one another without being, you know, called crazy. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're ever electronically monitored or attacked or anything on your property?
Oh, 100%. You know, no doubt whatsoever. All of our emails are sent out into Never Never Land. We can't even communicate with each other. You know, it's unbelievable what's going on here as far as the emails and that. And I know the phones are being tapped and monitored. You know, I had one investigator here that says, oh, you're just being paranoid. You know, and I said, really? And I said, we're out in the field talking. I go, watch this. And so I called him on the phone and I said, you know, at 11 o'clock, they're landing. They're actually going to land. They're going to give us the technology like this. And he goes, what? You know what? And I said, no. I said, seriously. I said, I was just meditating, and I got a really clear message that the ships are going to land at 11 o'clock, and they're going to give us the technology. And so he goes, okay. And I said, so let's be out in the field at 11 o'clock. Be sure we're out there. And he goes, okay, I'll be out there. And so I went over there and talked to him later. And I said, I'm going to prove a point. Watch this. At about 10:30, between 10 and 10:30, we had so many strange trucks, you know, parked around the property here.
Oh,
and,
really?
And flyovers and helicopters and you name it, you know. So it was kind of hilarious. And, you know, I went way out back around the back of the property and walked around and just, hey, how's it going? Said hi to all the guys, you know. You know. So,
well, maybe
what are you guys doing like this? And I go, oh, just checking some things out. They wouldn't even say what they were doing or whatever, you know. But it was funny. You know, the guys had earpieces and dressed way too nice for being out in our neck of the woods. So, you know, Gucci shoes and things like that. So
you should try that during the daytime and then take webcams with you and ride a 10-speed around and stop at every one of the vehicles. Hey, what are you all doing?
Yeah,
hey,
that'd be a good one.
Ow,
we've had psychotronics that we've actually monitored
here?
And measured coming in, both from satellites and both from a hillside where there was a van parked with a dish on a hill not too far away. You know, I can go on and on with things that, you know, we get hit with crazy frequencies, and you can feel them when they come in, you know, and there's a lot of...
Psychotronic?
Information out there about those kind of satellite technologies and microwave technologies. And, you know, just recently we've been filming a lot of black helicopters, and one flew over the ranch for 30 minutes and circled the ranch over and over again, no markings, nothing on it. And that was just a few days ago, and we actually put it up on YouTube. So definitely we know, you know, we had a visit, you know, from somebody called in and said we were terrorists, you know. So we've had those visits, you know, you name it. It's been going on. But, you know, when they come here, they see it just a very peaceful place where everybody's just doing a lot of healing and clearing work and meditating. And you know, it's a whole different energy here. And they realize how ridiculous it is when they actually do come on the property.
Unbelievable. Now, do you think they're doing anything psychotronically against you guys? I mean, are you feeling anxieties? You feel like you're being broadcasted on or something?
Oh, yes, definitely, 100%. You know, the room I'm in right now has a double foil backing on it. You know, the whole ceiling and the walls have a double foil backing on them. And it's just because of that. You know, I had to do something about it, but... You know, your body would get really hot at night. You'd have all the, you know, all the symptoms of having psychotronics hitting you. You'd have crazy, you know, like nightmare-type dreams and can't sleep, you know, irritable. You get really irritable. And they know how to broadcast those frequencies where they get you really irritable and upset and you can't sleep and your health goes down. And you know, they have all kinds of little games they have, you know, to play with, but... And
where do they broadcast it from? Are they set up? They're not set up on the mountain, are they? They got to be in mobile somewhere around.
Well, the only thing I've seen, what I know about, is that there's a whole array of satellites out there that have this technology on them, and there's people that have written whole books on it. And they have, you know, they can send like magnetic darts. They can send the frequency of fear or anger or even sedate people with this technology, and it's kind of a microwave or scalar technology, and Nick Bajic knows a lot about that. He's written books about that kind of technology and shown all the patents for it and everything else. So, you know, there's many ways they can do it. They can either do it through a satellite or they can do it through a mobile. And we've actually caught these mobile vans with these big dishes on them, you know, on the adjacent hill. Because we had a guy here with a system that he had an oscillator, and he was measuring all the frequencies and oscilloscope. And he was showing us, he goes, look, you've got three people broadcasting here, and these are the agencies that use these bandwidths. All three of them are going here. And you also have some incoming energy coming from the hill over there. And he showed us where it was, and we got some binoculars, and we could see a gray van up there with a dish on it. So, you know, it's pretty obvious that that's going on. But most of that seems to be subsiding. There seem to be kind of backing off. I think mainly because we've gone so public and we know what they're up to, that it's worse for them now to go forward with this, because they have to operate in secret. And you know, once the cover's blown, they just don't like to be operating, you know, out in the light, and they don't like people grabbing video cameras and filming them and you know, confronting them or whatever. So
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, that's
if
the whole deal. This whole program, all these things these guys are doing, are all in secret. You know, where is the transparency? But they are all being unveiled right now. So people are seeing, you know, all the whistleblowers and everything else are seeing what's really going on with all these, you know, crazy suppression toys that they're using.
Wow. Scary stuff. Well, yeah. I appreciate you staying on for two whole hours, James. We get to talk about all this stuff very, very rarely, and I know people are out there just hanging on by their fingernails because the network's totally packed with people, but nobody's calling in because they just want to hear what we're going to say next. So I think that there may be even a law on the books now that you can't film law enforcement doing their job. I think they're about sick and tired of these beatings showing up on YouTube, and they could show up quick now. I mean, you could film them with an iPhone, and they can be on YouTube in 5 minutes.
Oh yeah,
they can be on YouTube.
And that's
before
happening
they
everywhere.
Back to the office.
You know, it's just a matter of it's just a matter of time before all this is just gets exposed, and the people just say enough. And I really do feel that. I think the people are going to eventually just rise up and say, you know what, I'm done. And you know, even you look at the airlines. I mean, look at how much business they're losing because of this nonsense. They aren't getting reimbursed for this. You know, so and they're charging, you know, a huge amount of money on top of the tickets that people are getting fed up with. So, you know, just to cover this, it doesn't go to them, it goes to these other agencies. So I think all the way around, you know, everybody's getting screwed here. Even the businesses are getting screwed in these programs.
Well, you know, how do we regain it? How do we get it all back?
You know, I think it all boils down to, you know, the golden rule: do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And we've lost sight of that. And people need to just rethink this. You know, am I doing something that's detrimental to my brother and sister here, or am I doing something that's going to be extremely detrimental to the planet and the environment? And if so, I'm going to have to face the consequences down the road, or make some changes now and not be a part of this program. That it's the bottom line is just getting back to basics and getting back to the golden rule.
Yep, that's true. That's true. Well, we're completely out of time, James.
All right.
We'll have you on again, or I'll be on your program again. Don't forget, George, I can't remember his last name, is going to be at James's East City Ranch in August. Be sure to go to eastcity.org, pick up on the latest events there. You don't want to miss any. Or if they're not having an event, just to schedule a weekend. Go up there, rent a room, and do some stargazing.
And they are flying, so we've had some major events recently.
Well, that's not going to stop. We'll have some more.
All right. Hey, well, thanks for having me on the show, and they rang the dinner bell, so I'm going to run down and get something to eat.
Man, that sounds so good. Talk to you later, my friend.
All right. Take care.
Bye. All right, my friends, that's it for X Squared Radio, July 24th, 2011. Our AccuWindow forecast, 73 degrees, not raining, but overcast. It could rain again tomorrow. So peace to all of you, and we'll see you next week right here on X Squared Radio.
It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.